Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, growing your garden and fruits and veggies. Last time Julie Weisenhorn was here, we got a lot of questions about blueberries and peppers and tomatoes and fruit trees. So today, we're doing something we have never done before. It feels kind of surprising. We're going to give you lots of advice about raising delicious fruits and vegetables. And that's the focus of the show. We may get a little few questions in about pruning and all the rain, but the primary focus here is about fruits and vegetables. The soil, the seeds, the picking, the pruning. We'll open the phones right now for you. Which fruits and vegetables do you aspire to grow in your garden? And what's holding you back? If you've raised a juicy crop of strawberries or you've grown some beautiful peppers, you could also tweet me a photo of it, you know, just to brag, and I just might retweet your photos of your beautiful fruits and veggies. So you can do that at CarrieNPR, but also taking your calls. Are there fruits and vegetables that you aspire to growing, but I don't know, you don't think you have the space, you're not quite sure how to raise them? Perfect opportunity right here to call in with your questions. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Julie Weisenhorn is an Associate Extension Professor at the Horticulture Department at the U. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Yeah, glad to be back. Thanks.
Emily Tepe is a horticultural researcher at the U of M and author of The Edible Landscape, and she is Julie's wingwoman when it comes to fruits, right?
She's the expert.
Because I actually think, Julie, last time you were in, you were like, I've got just the person for this. So welcome, Emily. Really good to have you here.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
We're going to test your mettle. We'll see how this goes.
All right.
So, after my last show with Julie, Emily, I got fired up to grow some blueberries in my backyard. No, it has not happened. We've talked about whether to build kind of stepped up, right, containers to put them in or tiered. Is it too late to plant blueberries?
No, I don't think so. If you're buying plants from the garden center that are potted plants, you can put those in pretty much any time of the season. As long as you prepare that soil ahead of time, make sure it's a nice acidic soil mix, you can get those plants in any time during the summer. You wouldn't want to plant them too late into the fall because they would have a little hard time getting acclimated before the temperatures got really cold.
You just said acidic soil mix. Is that the case only for blueberries, or is that something that you're looking for in just about anything that you're planting as far as growing fruits and vegetables?
Mainly blueberries and plants that are related to them, like cranberries and lingonberries we can also grow here. They're in the Ericaceae family, which all require acidic soil. So that's different from something like apples, where they require a little more neutral soil. But the blueberries, they definitely need that acidic soil in order to absorb the nutrients they need.
Are you going to say, Julie, you should get your soil tested? I always think I'm going to do this, and I never get around to it.
Yeah, so a soil test, we have a great soil test laboratory. In fact, it just had a big facelift, and they will do a very good comprehensive soil test for about $17.
So you just take a scoop. I mean, how do you actually get your soil tested?
You actually will go and take a, let's say you have a new garden bed that you're going to do. You'll take a sampling of soil all over that garden bed, mix it in a bucket, and then put maybe a cup or two into just a plastic Ziploc type bag. And there's a form that you download. You fill it out, drop it off or mail it in with your check, and they'll send you the results by email.
What are you looking for when the results come back?
They're going to come back with the texture of your soil, which would be whether it's a sandy soil or a clay soil or a loamy soil. You'll get a pH reading, which is what Emily was talking about with the acidic soil. You'll also find out about with your fertilizer analysis. So what needs to be added to your soil in order to make it a better soil for what you're going to grow. That's another part of that soil test is you say, I'm going to grow a vegetable garden. So now the soil test lab knows that that's what they need to recommend for.
Okay, let's take some calls here to Jerry in Minneapolis. Hi, Jerry. What do you want to know?
Well, actually, we have a cherry tree.
Okay.
And last year, the cherry tree got hit by the spotted winged Sophia, or the fruit fly now that has been imported from China.
Yeah.
That is just devastating fruit, like hard fruit like cherries. And I'd rather not be doing some incredible spraying of some what would think would be some relatively toxic chemicals. What are we and a whole bunch of other people that would like to have cherry pies? What
Good.
Are we going to do about this?
Good question.
We are working on that because that is a new problem for us. And soft fruits like those cherries and blueberries and raspberries have been hard hit by that spotted winged Drosophila. And we're doing a lot of research at the U right now trying to figure out just how to prevent that. We're doing some trapping to try to control it a little bit. It's running a cycle now where we're just having to deal with
we're
it.
Kind
I
of
think,
behind
for
the
a little
curve
while.
Of getting ahead. Is he right that it came from China? Is that where this?
I'm not sure
this
where.
Kind
I believe
of
this one did come from Asia.
Okay.
Yeah, because we have other Drosophila here, but they're not
right.
quite as intense as these new ones are.
They
at attacking
ride in
fruits.
What on trees that are being transported or
not
what?
Sure,
how
they got here exactly? What homeowners can do is you can create a trap, and there's actually a good publication on our extension website about how to build that trap. I just ordered my yellow sticky traps to put into that. It's a combination of a clear plastic container with a certain size hole in it, and then you put in a yellow sticky trap along with cider vinegar, and you trap them, and that's a monitoring type device. And then cleaning up and being sure that you're picking on a regular basis, not letting fruit rot.
Picking the fruit off the trees.
Yep.
Okay.
Not letting it rot. And if you freeze it, you can actually, then you won't have the maggots that get, that appear in your fruit in the fridge.
Yuck. What?
So, yeah, that's what happens is the eggs hatch
oh
after
my
they're
gosh.
Picked.
And, what?
And it's pretty gross. But yeah, if you freeze it, then you don't know that you're eating the eggs.
I should ask you about the best tart cherry trees. I mean, what variety should you be looking for? I'd love to plant some of these.
Sure. There are a couple really good varieties that the university has developed a couple of them. The North Star tart cherry is one that was developed by the University of Minnesota, and it's a smaller tree, so they really only get to 8 to 10 feet tall, so they're great for small spaces. But there's also Meteor cherry is another good variety, and Suda is another one. And then there's also one that goes by two different names, Evans Bali, and you might see it by either of those names. But those are great varieties, very hardy. They're pretty small trees, so they're really nice for an urban backyard that might be
great.
Pretty small.
I like the Nanking cherries, too. We have those on campus. They're big. They're a large shrub, but they're, they're fantastic.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So not a tree.
Right. It's a shrub. Mm-hmm.
Can you plant that in a smaller space or...
Yeah,
what's the benefit of the shrub, would
well,
you say?
Well, it's a little more productive, maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of fruit on them. It's beautiful when it blooms. I mean, it has that benefit, too.
Okay.
And if you're looking for a hedge, for example, versus a single tree or a group of trees, it might be something that you'd be considering.
When do they fruit? I mean, what time of the year are you going to be able to get fruit off of
them? Right now, aren't they?
Cherries are earlier than some of the other tree fruits. So we'll be looking at those around the end of June, early to mid-July, those ripen. And you want to get those before the birds do. The birds really like them. So you want to make sure that they've gotten soft and they're developing a little bit of sweet flavor, but you want to get those off the trees before the birds get them from you.
We're talking fruits and vegetable growing here, gardening. We got so many questions on this the last time Julie was here that we've called in an expert on fruits and vegetable gardening, primarily fruit, yes?
Mm-hmm,
but some
I would
veggie.
Say so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And Julie can chime in on the veggies too. So what are your challenges in growing fruits and vegetables? Are there some new varieties that you want to try out? And if you have a photo, just got one from Tara. Beautiful. If you have a photo of some really spiffy fruits and vegetables growing in your own garden, you could tweet that at @CarrieNPR, and I'll retweet some of them to Mary Lou in Crystal. Hey, Mary Lou. Hi.
Good morning, Carrie.
Your question.
I have a question. My first year growing spinach, and I just have one sorry little plant, but I'm wondering when to pick it, and do I take the leaves off the top or off the bottom to eat.
So you can go ahead and pick those. That's great. You're growing it too. I mean, spinach is a great crop. And you want to pick those, the older leaves, as long as they're not getting yellow or kind of funky looking, and just keep picking them away. If you like the younger leaves too, you can pick those also, but you also want to have those keep developing. And you might find it bolting in the heat. Some varieties are more susceptible to that, meaning that they're just flowering. That's all it means, is that they flower. And if it does start to flower, just cut that flower off, and you can throw it in your compost bin. You want to avoid that because it will get a little bit bitter as it starts to produce a lot of energy into that flowering and ultimately seeding, and you want to avoid that. So you just cut those flower heads off if they come out and just keep picking on it. And it's something that that you can reseed also in about August, I think, Emily, don't you think, for those other leafy greens? So you could reseed it, and it will actually grow into the cooler weather as well.
Emily, listen to this. Here's Tara. She says, I planted Arctic kiwi vines, Minnesota hardy, a few years ago, and now they're producing loads of bite-sized, oh my gosh, no peeling necessary kiwis? I didn't know such a thing existed. She says the female is, you have to plant a male and a female, and they produce these lovely pinkish leaves. And I've retweeted the photo. Okay, tell me about no-peel kiwis.
It's
this is exciting.
True, and it's so exciting. And we have some new research happening at the university just starting this year about kiwis. So we call them either hardy kiwi fruit or kiwi berries because they're about the size of a grape. And they're related to the big kiwi that we know from New Zealand, but they do. They're hardy here. They grow on these huge vines that grow probably 20 to 40 feet per year. They just grow like crazy. So you have to trellis them on something pretty sturdy because they're very big, heavy vines. But they do. They produce these beautiful little grape-sized fruit. Very delicious. They taste like kiwi. And they're becoming more popular around here, which is great to have a new fruit crop growing around Minnesota.
So as long as we're talking about vines, let me get a question in here from my buddy, Kathy Werzer, who aspires to be a grape farmer. I'm not sure how this is going on her place yet, but what are some of the varieties and what do you have to do to prepare to grow good grapes? Uh-oh. Yeah, Julie.
Well, there are a lot of wild grapes. Our native wild grape, Vitis riparia, is a great grape to grow. It's very prolific. Grows. You need to have a good trellising system for any grape that you're going to grow. They're a woody vine, so they're strong, and they have they put out quite a bit of growth in the spring. There's a pruning method to them to make them more productive. You want to focus on the fruit, not so much on foliage. So timing of that pruning is important. And then they really don't require very organic soil. I mean, it's not like a rich soil might produce too much foliage. And so you're really looking for that fruit. Got to be careful about the SWD, that spotted wing Drosophila, which is a little bit of an issue. And there are some types of grapes that are better than others from a disease resistance. And that's always a good thing to take a look at. And then ultimately deciding, are you growing for winemaking or are you growing for just the juice for jelly or eating?
How do you decide? I mean, why does that matter?
It matters because it's just the flavor of the grape. It's a sugar content. And so you can look at the University of Minnesota website on our extension site. We have an awesome grapes section. And look at the different choices that you have. Bluebell is one that's more for jelly. I've got King of the North in my backyard. That's a terrific plant. Really happy with that.
Do you need tons of room to do this, Julie?
You need quite a bit of room. You need really good fencing or trellising for it to grow on.
Okay.
You don't want it flopping around on the ground. And you want to definitely be growing it in full sun.
Call here from Gloria in St. Paul. Hi, Gloria. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. So I have a question about strawberries.
Okay.
I got some transplants from a friend last year. We put them in midsummer, and they looked a little unhappy, but I thought, well, just give them a year. They came in this year looking really good, and they were starting to produce really nice berries, like beginning of June. And then two things happened. One, some of the berries got really bloated, like they got overheated. So I don't know if I have them in too sunny of a spot.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that happened is that the leaves have been just shredded by something. And friends are telling me, oh, it's probably slugs. But I'm not sure what to do about that.
What do you think, Emily?
It could be, gosh, there are several things that that could be. Sunburn could be a possibility on what's happening with the fruit. Also, maybe just all the water that we've had sometimes can just make fruit get really watery and bigger than you would expect. So I would just pick that as soon as you can, as soon as it looks ripe. And the shredding, it could be, gosh, there are
wind
things
hail
out there that like to chew on strawberry leaves. I guess I would just, if the plants are looking okay for the most part, I would keep it going once, especially if they're a variety that's perennial here, which it seems like they are since you've grown them a couple years now. I would just keep it going, keep them nicely fertilized, and I think that they should, once they're really established, they should be able to weather any of those kinds of little problems.
What kind of soil do you need for good strawberries?
Really just a well-drained, you don't want standing water, so a well-drained soil.
Not especially acidic.
pH doesn't really matter with those as much, but just nicely well-drained and certainly fertile. You want to keep it nice and fertile.
Here's Juliet. She says, I filled the garden with peppers this year, and she tweeted me three different peppers. She says, we ate that purple one this morning, and it had a very strong flavor. Where are purple peppers coming from? I mean, is this a new variety or they've been out there a while?
There are a lot of
beautiful shapes.
There's a lot of plant breeding that goes on to make varieties of all different colors.
White,
so that's what you
white
see.
Peppers.
Exactly.
Wow.
White and purple and reds. And a lot of them will be green until they really ripen. Mm-hmm. And then you'll start to see those colors. But yeah, I know there's a chocolate bell pepper a kind of a purplish brown. So there are a lot of colors that just make these plants just a little more interesting in the garden and just offer a little bit of different flavor, too.
I've been buying little packets of different colors of carrots at Trader Joe's.
Yes,
and
I love those.
No, they don't taste all that different, but they're fun.
Yeah,
it's fun eating
really
a purple
fun
carrot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
A question here on Twitter, a listener asks, could your guests provide any advice for small container edible gardens for us apartment dwellers who only have tiny patios to plant on? Thanks so much. Advice.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are so many.
I've got some in my yard now.
I'm sure you do.
What do you recommend?
Well, actually, our industry has made it easy because they label them with not only, they might say like a patio a variety, or they might give it a cute name like Tumblin' Tom Tomatoes. Birdie Mix is an old one, probably one of the first container tomatoes I ever saw. And they give them, like patio smackers or snackers. I've got a cucumber that's doing that right now. That's one of those. So
they're
bred for containers.
Okay.
Many of them are. And so for containers, you want to look for things, if it's a typically larger kind of vegetable, like a tomato, you want to look for something that's labeled compact or bush size, but also something like greens, lettuces, and kale, and my favorite in the world, Swiss chard, is they're all great for containers because they're compact and they grow really nicely. But then also strawberries can do really, really well in containers. And even something large like a zucchini I've grown in containers. If you look for a bush-type zucchini, they're great because the zucchinis just kind of lay over the edges of the container and they're easy to harvest.
Yeah.
So
basically most anything that you grow in an open garden, you could probably just, shrink down the size and the space of the plants and put them in a container for the most part?
You could trellis them up also.
Okay.
You can add a trellis or... I've got a kind of a pyramidal shaped trellis that's in a square pot of mine, and I've got some Japanese cucumbers growing out that get to be about 18 inches long.
Yeah.
So I'm just training those vines up that trellis, and it looks really neat.
That's
it gives
great.
You some vertical height too, versus having containers that are all exactly the same height.
Call here from Steve in Gilbert. Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for waiting.
Hi.
What's your question?
Tomatoes.
Okay.
I've grown tomatoes for quite a while. But anyway, last year with all the rain, I had blight. I had both an early blight and a late blight. And they even took out the cherry tomatoes. And I've got plants growing again this year, and I want to do whatever I can to keep them growing.
Okay, so the question here, Steve, is what?
What do I do to combat the blight?
Okay, got it.
Well, there's not a whole lot we can do about the rain. If we've got a really rainy season, things will just happen that we can't combat. Make sure that if you can, make sure your soil is really well drained. If you can get those plants up in containers, that can help. Just keep them a little drained a little bit better. And then just cleaning, keeping things really clean, making sure you don't have any fruit or dead leaves rotting at the bottom. That can really help prevent a lot of those diseases from transferring.
Right. And it's probably too late now, but thinking about next year, Steve, is to rotate your crops. So tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, eggplants are all in the same nightshade family, and they all are susceptible to similar or the same diseases, things like the different blights. And so if you keep planting in the same place with any of those crops over and over, you're going to just perpetuate those pathogens that are in the soil. So you want to move those crops around to different places. And how far? Boy, it's hard to say because it depends on the amount of space you have. But what you can do is choose disease-resistant varieties, and then also be sure to mulch your plants to prevent any soil from splashing up onto the leaves of your tomato plants now. So you can use a clean straw, meaning seedless. You can use any kind of a wood mulch, provided that you add some extra nitrogen to the soil. Something that keeps that soil contained with, down and not splashing up onto the plants is important. And then avoid overhead watering, too. Use a drip hose at the base of the plant versus like an oscillating sprinkler that will splash that soil up and down. Doesn't help when it comes down from the sky, but you can at least alleviate it on your own.
If you've just gotten in on the show, we've got Julie Weisenhorn here and Emily Teppe from the University of Minnesota, and we're focused on fruit and vegetable gardening. Julie was here, a few weeks ago, and we got so many questions about blueberries and tomatoes, so we thought we would just zero in on that. So you have a question about growing vegetables and growing fruits. I think we've got the people for you. Call in 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And if you're on Twitter and you've got a photo of your beautiful garden, your fruits and vegetables, I'd love to see it. I'm retweeting a bunch of photos here. So shoot it to me. It's at Kerri, KerriMPR. Before we got on the air, Julie asked me about how my garden was doing, and I said, it looks like Jurassic Park down there because everything is huge because of the rain and the heat that we've had. And so I was going to ask you about pruning midsummer, and this is not a fruit or veggie thing, but I was just thinking, I need to get down there and exert some control over these plants. I mean, they're what do I do? Can I prune now, or is that a bad idea?
You can prune some of your plants. You can prune evergreens now.
Okay.
And you want to avoid pruning any oaks. So if you have any oak trees, and just kind of leave those alone until fall.
They're the ones that are going crazy.
Yeah. Okay. You can prune, if you've got any flowering shrubs that flowered in the spring, you can do some pruning now.
Okay.
It's a little bit late. You want to prune those within a couple of weeks after blooming, but you could still take out a few things. I've got some lilacs that have got to get thinned out a little bit.
Yeah.
Flowers or no flowers next year.
What does your garden look like with all this rain and heat?
Well, I've noticed that everything exploded at the same time. So the plants got, the good plants got great, but the weeds also got great. So we had immense numbers of thistle, and we've got a nasty mustard that's growing in the courtesy of, I think, somebody in agronomy. But
I think so.
It's all over everywhere. The display garden, and we worked like our tails off trying to get that stuff out of there. And so, but everything kind of happened all at once.
Yeah.
And I think that was what threw people for a loop. You know, one day you walk out and your garden looks pretty puny, and the next day you walk out and it's like, holy cow, I better get to work.
Emily, some advice on the rain and the heat and what to do?
Sure. I think for people who are growing fruit trees, what you'll probably be seeing soon is these water sprouts coming up from the branches. And this is really vigorous vertical growth. You can almost watch these things growing. They grow so fast. And that's definitely something that you can take out now.
That won't
hurt the tree. It's just, you want to get some of that out of there to open up the canopy. So those real green vertical shoots, those can come out now. And also if you're seeing suckers coming up from the roots of your trees, you can mow those or clip those out now too. And that'll just help the tree get through the season.
Good to know. Call here from Bonnie in Brookings. Hey, Bonnie. Hi. Hi, Bonnie. You there? Okay. So we might have lost her. To Betty in St. Cloud. Hi, Betty. What's your question?
Hi, I've tried growing sweet potatoes in the past. Now, this is the vegetable, not the decorative sweet potato vine. And the growing season seems like it's too long that they don't get mature. Is there anything I can do to actually be able to grow a sweet potato here?
Well, I'll tell you what, Betty, I'm actually growing them in our display garden for the first time this year. So I've never grown them either, but I do know that they require quite a long growing season that we suffer through. There are some that we don't have here in Minnesota. There are some, like I was talking with some master gardeners about this, and Beauregard was one that we planted, and it's supposedly a huge sweet potato. But one of the problems that we have is curing the sweet potatoes after they're picked, after you've harvested them, dug them up. And for some reason, you have to cure them at like 85 degrees. And so it's difficult for the homeowner to cure your sweet potatoes and have them not rot. So it's not necessarily even the growing part of it. It's the curing part after you harvest it that we struggle with. And I don't have an answer for it. We were kind of coming up with putting it in a cooler with a light on it and a heat mat and, you know, jerry rigging whatever we could. And so we'll, you know, stay in touch because maybe we'll compare notes at the next time I'm on the show or something.
Some of those longer season crops also can benefit from a raised bed. And so if you raise up that soil a bit, it warms up quicker in the spring. And so you can help extend your season a little bit with that.
I think we have a call actually about a raised bed from Reka in Minneapolis. Hey, Reka. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Yeah, I have my garden bed ready to go, but I think my timing is off from Minneapolis growing season because I want to plant seeds right now, and I'm seeing a big gap for what seeds can be planted around the next few weeks of June and the beginning of July. So any recommendations on what I can go ahead and plant now?
But you really want to do the seeds. You don't want to go out and buy the plants. Is that right?
I already have the transplants done, and I have a nice section of space I just want to throw some seeds in.
Seeds, you guys. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, hopefully the temperatures won't be quite as hot as they have been the last couple of days. And so you could probably get some of the shorter season things in, greens and things like that. If you're starting tomatoes from seed, that would be too late at this point because they'll just need a longer season than that. But I would say go for it.
You could do root vegetables too. You could do carrots or parsnips. You could probably do some flowers too to help encourage pollinators to your bed, and that might make your squash more productive and your melons, that kind of thing.
Did you say earlier that you love Swiss chard?
I do.
Why?
Oh,
it's bitter,
great,
isn't it?
Oh, great plant.
Well, how much time do we have?
We could have Swiss chard.
Not
day.
That much.
I love Swiss chard because, well, one, I think it's very similar to spinach in flavor and how you can use it. But the plant grows well in the cool season, but it also tolerates heat really well. So whereas your spinach is going to be done by the time the temperatures get warm, Swiss chard, if you keep harvesting it, it'll grow all through the heat of summer and into the fall. And you
so
can
it's
just
not bitter like I think it is?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
No, and if you saute
plant.
It down and cook it into like an egg frittata, something like that, or with pasta. It's just, I think it's delicious.
So Vicky,
and it looks great in the garden.
Vicky was saying on Twitter here, I love to grow lettuce that's crunchy, not bitter. I've tried many varieties. Most are limp and somewhat bitter. Is there a variety you'd recommend for the area that's somewhat like romaine? Do you call Swiss chard, is it a lettuce? No, not really a variety
of lettuce.
When
Swiss chard is used raw, it's usually picked very small, and so that would be very tender. Most of the lettuces that we grow around here are the loose leaf ones that are much more tender. I think they're very sweet. They get more bitter when they later in the season.
Right.
But
she might want to try some kale. Kale is, you know, like a dinosaur kale. When those younger leaves, they've got a crunch and they're. That's the only kale I like. I don't like the curly kale, but I like that dinosaur kale. And it adds some body to food. You can saute it without it completely collapsing on you. But I'm a chard fan also. I've got a lot of the Bright Lights chard growing in my yard and some deep red stuff I got that's in a blue pot. It looks fantastic.
We're getting a lot of questions about apples, so we'll get a look at the latest news.
Good one. Okay.
And I know you brought a little cheat sheet there on apples.
You're not supposed to say that, Carrie.
I tell it all. There are no secrets on the air. So sure, if you have questions about apples, we'll take some of your calls and your questions online on Twitter about apples. It's 651-227-6000. 800-242 wherever you are, 2828 wherever you are in the area. And then on Twitter, at Keri, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Keep those great photos coming. I'm going to retweet as many of them as I can find. And even after the show, I'll be checking it out. Back to the conversation now and to some questions about apples to Bonnie in Brookings. Hey, Bonnie. Hi.
Hi. I have a Minnesota Wolf River apple tree. Very prolific, and the apples are huge. They get to be the size of baby heads, but they also attract a lot of bugs.
Yeah.
Is that a non-toxic chemical that I can use, something that's not really harmful to the environment that I can put on those apples?
It kind of depends on what problems you're having. They're all different things that love to eat our apples in addition to us. so it is tricky to protect them, and it's really hard to grow organic apples in this state because of that. There are some clay-based products that you can use as a spray that basically creates a barrier on the fruit and the leaves that can help prevent some of those problems. If you're getting insect damage where they're actually like laying eggs in the fruit and things like that, you can bag them early in the season. I know Julie's done that at home. So if you've got a smaller scale planting, you can actually put bags over the little fruit.
Do you do that? And then it grows through the bag?
I have done it, yes.
What's the bag made of?
It's just a plastic bag.
Really?
And it won't impair
the growth of the fruit itself?
No, there's a timing to doing it. I think that I want to say that they're about the size of a quarter or so, the fruit. And you take a bag that zips shut. And you put it over the fruit and you zip it shut and you staple it on either side. It's real futzy. I mean, it takes a long time. But, you know, if you spend the time up front, you save a lot of time in spraying. And you always cut a corner off of the bag, too, to let moisture out of it, too.
Yeah. Right. You certainly wouldn't do that in an orchard.
Right. Yeah.
That would be a little bit too much work. And so that's why orchards do spray.
Yeah. Here's Kevin who says, I have a few acres of land with an apple tree. I'd like to add another apple tree and add in pear and plum trees. And you said there are some great plum varieties. Mm-hmm. Any recommendation on the varieties I should look at or stay away from? The land is hillside and well-drained.
Nice. Well, you're off to a good start. With apples, it really depends on the flavor that you like. There are so many that the university's developed, but also a lot of other ones that are available to us. One that I think is really interesting that isn't grown very much is a chestnut crab apple. And it's actually a really large crab apple, so we don't even refer to it as that very often. But it's got a really nice, nutty, interesting flavor. And it's just something that I don't think is grown as much as it should be. But of course, something like a Zestar would be a great choice. If you're looking for some disease-resistant ones, there's Liberty and Freedom have some disease resistance. So those are some suggestions on the apple side. As far as plums, we can grow some amazing plums in Minnesota, and a couple of varieties also developed by the University of Minnesota. Alderman is a great one. It's very popular and it's easy to find in the garden centers. And then Superior is another really nice one that just has big, really juicy fruit and great flavor. Now, with the plums and apples, you need to plant different varieties of those in order to get cross-pollination to happen. And so you can't just plant one plum tree and expect it to produce fruit. You'll need to plant another one. And so there's cross-pollination possibility there.
Okay. To Cheryl in Holman. Hi, Cheryl. Another question about apples.
Hi. I'm interested in putting in a couple different varieties of apples, but we have a lot of cedar trees around here and in the past had problems with the cedar rust. So I'm looking for some varieties that have a natural resistance for the cedar rust.
There's one that I know of in particular, and it's called Liberty. And that one is resistant to apple scab and fire blight and rust. And it's the main one that I can think of that's hardy to our region. It's a medium-sized fruit. It's kind of similar to a Macintosh in flavor, but it's a little bit firmer. So that would be a good choice for here.
I have a photo here that you can't see on Twitter, but Dale says these showed up on the underside of the leaves of our plum bushes this year, and they look like little white narrow. Uh-oh, yeah, turn off
Sorry
that phone
about
there,
that.
Girl.
Oh, I was going to the Twitter. I was going to be so smart.
but they look like kind of long narrow white insects.
Are they growths on the bottom?
So they could be that too, actually.
They're probably a type of gall.
Okay. What does that mean?
And a gall is usually produced by some insect feeding, but ordinarily they're not harmful to the plant. They're just a weird oddity that happens when a certain insect feeds. I'm not even sure if it's sometimes a midge that's feeding. We see those on hackberries and a lot of times on maples.
But they're okay.
They're fine, yeah. Okay. Oak galls. Yeah.
Not going to affect the fruit or anything.
No. Okay. No, they shouldn't.
Good to know.
One thing, too, about the apple trees is if people have a crab apple, an ornamental crab apple, they can often be a cross-pollinator for a fruit, an eating apple
as
well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, or your neighbors, if they have one. I think it can be within
100 feet or so.
Yep, so around the neighborhood.
Here's Dylan who says, my wife and I are headed out of town for the next 6 days, just as our cherry tree is fruiting.
Oh, boy.
Listening to your show as I feverishly pick the cherries. Love that.
Yeah, Dylan.
Dylan, you could totally drop off a big container of those cherries at NPR.
We'll come over and help you as soon as we're done here.
Definitely.
I mean, yeah, because you're going to be gone. So let me do you the service of eating those cherries because they look fantastic. To Chris in Bloomington. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I have a question about apple trees. We have a standard Harrelson that's about 40 years old and is slowly losing limbs in storms, but we love the Harrelson and you can't get them anymore. I have planted a couple of seeds and I have little trees coming up. Will they be true or not? And is there someone I could hire to graft a piece of my apple to do another apple tree? Because I really love the standard Harrelson.
Interesting question.
Good questions. The seeds will probably grow into trees and produce fruit someday, but they will not be just like those Harrelson apples. There'll be some other combination, which it may end up being great, or they might end up being a good cider apple, but they won't come true to that variety. You could probably find someone to graft them for you, but also I would say with that old tree, just be real careful about pruning it. If you see damage and things like that through the years, prune it and keep the shape nice and keep it sort of balanced in form and size. And you should be able to hang on to it, hopefully, for a while, because that is a great variety.
Yeah, there's also a Harrel Red. That's a cross between, I think, a Paula Red and a Harrelson. That's a delicious apple. My mom grew one of those up north for many, many years until it finally came down in a storm. But it was an excellent cooking apple, baking apple.
It's called a Harrel Red.
Harrel Red. Okay. Yeah, and it had a great combination of the two.
And my buddy Jay here just tweeted a photo of 30 tomatoes started from seeds in the garden now.
Nice.
Carrots, beans, snow peas, popcorn, radishes, eggplants, Brussels sprouts, potatoes, squash, cucumbers,
fantastic.
Watermelons too, and dog hair, and pumpkins. And here's what he says, no fence, so we save dog hair and put it around plants to deter deer.
Wow.
Does it work, you guys?
Well,
if it's working for him.
I have lots of deer and lots of dog hair, so this might be a solution.
It's not something that we would recommend, but, you know, people try lots of different things. A good fence, electric fence, is a good way to deter deer as well.
So unsightly.
Well, you know, you don't need to have it doesn't have to look like a prison or anything, let people try different things. They try soap. There's all different home remedies, but we really have trouble supporting that from a research standpoint because it's very anecdotal.
I hear you loud and clear. Okay. To Sharon
sometimes
in Vadnais Heights.
Hair.
Hey, Sharon, your question about plum trees. Good. What do you want to know?
Well, I planted a toca and a superior plum the year before last. And then last year, there was probably a half a dozen plums between the two trees. And this year, there's only one plum on one of the trees.
No.
And I'm just wondering, is that kind of normal or?
Don't worry about that. If you just planted those trees a couple years ago, and great choices, by the way. Toca is a really good variety to grow because it produces so many flowers, and so it's a great pollen source for the other ones. But don't worry about that. In the first year, it probably just the transplanting really made them want to flower and produce fruit. This year, they're trying to figure out where they are, and so it usually takes 3 to 5 years to really get a decent crop off of trees that you transplant in your garden. So I would hold out hope. They should be fine.
Okay, we have another question about plum trees here from Dave in New Hope. Who knew there were so many people growing plums? This is cool. Hi, Dave. What do you want to know?
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
This is Dave the Abider Rider.
All right.
Yeah.
Rock on.
And sorry, Julie, we can't talk about Creeping Charlie today, but I do have two American plum trees that went in 4 years ago. Last year was the first year they produced significant fruit, and I was monitoring them and tasting them, and they were just so tart that I couldn't do anything with them until they got really close, and then one day they were all gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming somebody liked them, but not me. And so is there something that I can do to prevent what I'm guessing is birds or something from
eating the
fruit before I get to it?
The timing is tricky. You can net your trees. So if they're not too big, there's bird netting that you can put over them, and that does prevent a lot of that damage. We do that on some of our cherry trees sometimes. But just keeping an eye on them, making sure that you're tasting them every couple of days, making sure that you know exactly when they get ripe, and try to pick those as soon as possible. But netting can work.
So is this netting that you would just buy, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's at your local hardware store or something like that?
At a garden center would probably have it. Definitely places that focus a little more on fruit trees.
The birds really can't get through the net to pluck out the fruit.
They can do a little bit of damage, but okay. I think they would be deterred enough that they wouldn't get all of it.
Okay. Phone call here from Terry in Rose. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed Catherine. To Catherine in St. Louis Park. Catherine, sorry about that.
Hi, no problem. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
I also have alderman and toca plum trees.
Oh,
we planted a third plum tree. The first two are espaliered against the garage. And they're probably 5 years old, I think, maybe six. And they give plums lots of blossoms, mostly plenty of good baby plums, little tiny plums. And then they get to be about quarter, half dollar size round, and they fall off. And I thought about tape, but that doesn't, you know. So, like, and then we planted a third plum tree thinking, well, maybe they're not getting pollinated correctly. But what's up with that? How can we help the trees?
That is a natural phenomenon for plums. And some years it will happen more than others. It's something we don't completely understand. But the tree is basically trying to thin itself because they'll produce so much fruit that the tree just can't support all of it. And so in most years, it'll drop just some of that. And then that's good for us because the rest of the fruit has the reserves to ripen really well. But there are some years that just happens. And it I know it's frustrating. But again, plums are the kind of thing where you need to give them a little bit of time to get acclimated to the space that they're in. And we also have some problems with plums in that they bloom pretty early in the spring. And so sometimes those flowers will get killed by frost, and then you won't have any fruit that year. So they do take some patience, and they're worth it when you do get that fruit. But again, I would hold on and keep growing them, keep pruning them the way you are. Espalier is a great choice for those, and I'm pretty confident you will get some fruit.
So I'm retweeting some photos here. Will you guys, after the show, go on Twitter and check out some of these questions
sure.
that are specifically
sure.
with
yeah,
photos
absolutely.
That... you need to see, like, what are these trees? So you get the picture. Okay, to Terry in Roseville now. Hey, Terry, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't have questions on growing things, but as a gardener who overplants because either I'm afraid that I'm not going to get produce or because I just can't resist, do you know of places to donate excess harvest so it doesn't go to rot?
Because NPR,
I
think, would be the answer to that.
NPR,
okay.
Yep.
So
yep.
Where could you take it? You're asking.
Yeah, so there's food shelves, and I would contact them first and find out what they accept. They don't all accept. They don't. Not all food shelves have refrigeration facilities where they can hold food and keep it fresh. But contact a local food shelf and ask them if you can donate. They will probably ask if it's, you know, treated with anything. And it sounds like you're an avid gardener. You probably aren't treating your plants at all. But yeah, contact them. That would be great. Also, give it to neighbors. Bring it to work. You know, you maybe already do that. But people always enjoy getting some fresh produce. And not everybody's able to to grow it in their garden. They maybe don't have enough time.
To the phones to Kathy in Minneapolis. Hey, Kathy, hi.
Hi. Am I on?
Yeah. Go right ahead. Your question
for taking my call.
Julie
Nebbon. Just a quick answer in response to the previous caller. Just put a box out on your front walk and say,
sure.
Free goodies. And
yeah,
boy, they'll disappear
idea.
In a hurry. My question is, can we grow apricots and peaches in Minnesota? I love these fruits and wait every year for the imported ones to come in from the south.
Yeah.
And if we can, what varieties would you recommend?
Good question.
Great question. So we can grow a few apricots and peaches possibly. But apricots, we do have a couple varieties that are hardy here. There's a moon gold and a sun gold that the university developed many years ago. And then there's also one called Westcott that apricot aficionados really love it. It's a little harder to find, but you can track it down at some nurseries. Maybe you'd have to look online to find a nursery to buy it from, but those are possibilities.
Did you say West Gold?
Westcott.
Westcott.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And then peaches are just now starting to become a possibility here. There are more varieties that people are trying to breed more hardiness into. They're not super reliable, but there is actually one called Reliance or Reliant, and Contender is another one to try. So if you check the bigger nurseries that have a lot of fruit trees, they should have a couple of those that you can try. If it's in a nice protected spot, you might get fruit every couple of years.
What's the story on how they name these varieties?
Oh, I always like that.
That's probably a whole show.
There's actually a great resource that we have at the University of Minnesota Landscape Arboretum called Plant Information Online. And it's a database that's managed by the Anderson Horticultural Library. And the librarians there spend I mean, I think it's all year long, entering in sources for plants. So if you're looking for a Westcott or you're looking for a Moon Gold, you can go onto the Arboretum site, go to Plant Information Online. I think it's plantinfo.umn.edu. And you can find both wholesale and retail opportunities or places to get those plants.
Josh says, any tips for warding off beetles on raspberry plants? And actually, there's quite a few questions here about Asian beetles, you guys, on raspberries.
So are we talking about Japanese beetles?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well,
oh boy.
So on the scale of a home garden, and I do this as well, get out there when you first see them with a bucket of soapy water and flick those guys into that bucket. And you need to do it every day. But what that'll do is disrupt the
reproduction,
the feeding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you get to them early and get those off your plants, you will minimize the damage. Majorly.
You have to keep up with it, though, as soon as you see them.
You do.
Yeah, you need to keep up on it.
Take
it's one of those things.
Take your coffee out there every morning and just flick a few into a bucket of soapy water.
And I usually keep like a gallon, a milk jug, a gallon milk jug and with a lid on it. And I put the soapy water in that about half full. And I just put the top on when I'm done and I set it over in the shade. And so it's always there to grab, and you just go out there, and it's very satisfying to flick those babies in there.
It is.
One of the things, too, is that we're finding some of the research is showing that the plants are actually, as they're fed on, they attract more beetles. They're putting out some kind of a compound or something that's saying, come feed here. So if we could interrupt that in the plants, that'd be great. But the beetles, they're always a problem. We get questions about that year round.
One last question here from Rob in St. Paul, and it involves raspberries too. Hey, Rob, real quick.
Yes, absolutely. I have raspberries and peonies that are planted right next to each other, and now they're growing together.
Oh.
And I'm wondering, do I need to transplant one of them, and which one would I move?
Okay. What do you think, Emily or Julie?
Well, raspberries spread aggressively. And so I would go in and dig out those raspberries that are starting to grow into your peonies. And that'll help your raspberries.
Peonies. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I thought he said kiwis, but it is peonies. No, you're right.
Yeah, I would address the raspberries. Cut those back, dig out those ones that are growing into the peonies. And that'll help everything.
Yeah. And I'd move the peonies. I'd leave the raspberries.
Oh, you would?
And the peonies, we have a publication on that on extension.umn.edu on the garden side website. And there's a timing for moving peonies.
I was going to say, they seem delicate to move.
Well,
They're
not delicate to move. It's a timing thing. But you also want to replant them at exactly about an inch and a half deep. Don't plant them deeper. That's the real trick. Otherwise, they won't bloom.
always, that's always the
yes,
rule with peonies?
Yes, it's always the rule. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, it's a depth thing.
I've wanted to plant them.
Yeah.
And
inch and a half.
It's really about how deep you go.
Right.
What about the soil?
To get the bloom.
Now that we're on
to
this.
They're pretty good, pretty average garden soil. Isn't real particular. Good drainage is important. And they'll get to be a huge tuber type root down there. So he's going to have to dig really deeply to move the peonies.
Okay.
Really deeply.
Your people at the U of M are tweeting out that they've got podcast episodes on spotted wing, whatever hell.
Oh, yeah. Drosophila.
Drosophila management. Oh, my gosh. Talk about nerds.
It's a problem.
Yes, we are.
I'll retweet that. You can listen to the podcast episodes if you must. Julie, Emily, thank you. Really great to have
you.
Really
great.
Thanks, Gary.
Great to have you here. Thanks.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.